guidelines when you go to this mwall.mobi. But yeah, welcome to the XML course. This time, I guess we had something like 190 students, which is pretty remarkable. And sorry?
You can't do anything there.
Yeah. Which is pretty nice. I think last time we had something like 130. This time, it will slowly pass to an optional course, but I guess for many of you, it's still mandatory according to your own study plan. So, and I think there are quite many people from other faculties, or are all of you from the IT faculty? Maybe if you aren't, you can raise your hand. Everyone from this faculty? Okay, that's nice. And just to clarify, are there non-Finnish-speaking students here? Okay, very good. We stick to English. Okay, so yeah, if you already did this course earlier by the name of XML Kieli or Introduction to XML, you shouldn't take part in this course, and maybe just write to us if you have done that, but that's already quite many years ago. And today's lecture will actually be held by Philip Holtkamp. We'll be distributing the lectures quite a bit between us. As you will see during the lectures, XML is quite of a wide topic that you apply in many kinds of expertise and jobs when you're working with web services or with schemas and so on. And in this lecture series, you will see a couple of visiting lectures as well from some company workers who have dealt with XML from various points of views to just bring kind of a, well, many points of views for you to just understand better what XML is all about. My name is Henri Pirkkalainen. I'm here as a project researcher for something like 5-6 years. We started with Philip around the same time in one European project called Open Scout, which was dealing with open learning materials for management education. But what we actually developed there was some kind of a web environment where XML played quite a major role, and that's one of the reasons why we are here as lecturers. And yeah, maybe Philip, you can just take over this lecture and try to use mWall just for questions regarding the topic. If you have anything, any concerns, questions, you would like some more details or something. And otherwise, we put it that it's only accepted messages go through, and we don't want to do that. So, not too many test messages, please. Okay, that's all for me. So, see you on Thursday for myself. Then we're talking about some XML basics and actually doing quite lots of hands-on work.
Okay, I guess my microphone is working as well. I'm Philip Holtkamp. I'm also, as Henry said, working at the Department of Computer Science and Information Systems. I'm originally German, so I'm very happy that Henry decided that we stick to English, because otherwise this would be a problem for me as well. I'm a PhD student working on different topics here, and om du vill, vi kan prata svenska, men jag kan inte riktigt prata svenska. So, but yeah, we have different topics and many different projects, and you will see in this course that XML, in that sense, is not really a programming language, and it's very hard to define what is an expert in XML, because XML, as Henry said, is such a very, very wide topic, and it just enables many different things. And it's basically the more or less the root that you need for anything related to software or data representation on the internet. Most languages used there are based on XML. But back to us, we are both coming from the Global Information Systems group, so we deal a lot with international issues, intercultural issues, how to represent data for people from different cultures. If we look at web pages from Japan and web pages from Europe, they look very different, and how to address those things, how to address different cultural issues in learning, etc. Our focus areas are global information systems, a lot about knowledge management and e-learning. So some of the examples we will show you in this course are related to e-learning. Then a lot also with standardization, and that's a very important topic for XML because very many technical standards include XML, are based on XML, and thus enable a communication between systems or representation of data on the internet. So, of course, as always, we have to start with a lot of information about the course. This course has 4 credit points, and we will have 6 lectures, 2 guest lectures, and 4 exercises. Of course, at the end, we have to have an exam. The lectures will take usually place on Tuesdays. And just this week, we will have 2 lectures to get you a bit more started with the topic so that the first exercise is not a jump into the cold water. You can see the dates of the lectures there. We will always be in this room. We give the lectures in English. And as you can see, or as you probably saw in the start, we are recording all lectures, so they will be available online. All the material, all the slides and examples can be found also from Optima. I will go through that in a bit. Then we will have 2 guest lectures, one as it's a colleague of us who deals a lot with enterprise architecture, service-oriented architectures, etc. So he will give an introduction to service-oriented architecture and how XML is used there. And then we have another guest lecture from a company who will explain how they use XML in practice and what it means to them. Then the exercises will be on Thursday, starting next week. We will get to that in a bit. And we already set the exam dates. The first exam is on the 25th of March, so it's about 2 weeks after the last session in this course, and then basically always a month later. You can write the exam in English or in Finnish, so whatever you prefer, what is easier for you. Then here, just a short overview, what will happen in the different dates. I guess that is more important for you. What this course is about. So, as we said, XML is a very wide topic. We can't get you all to become XML experts in 6 lectures. The idea of the course is to introduce you to the topic, get some understanding and knowledge of the XML concepts and properties, meaning that you are able to actually understand if someone else talks about XML, that you can explain XML documents and also write easy XML documents. We won't go to really complex cases, of course, but I think the main idea for me is that you understand what XML is, what you can do with XML, for what it is used, how it is used, etc. We then have this interpret EBNF. I gray that a bit out because, for me, first of all, we won't ask for that in the exam. It's something quite complex. While I was studying, I never understood what EBNF is or what it's good for. But if you understand it, it's a great help because the XML specification, meaning all the rules for XML, are written in this EBNF in the extended Backus-Naur form, and you will get relevant parts of the specification for the exam. So if you are able to read this, you basically have all explanations how to write XML with you in the exam. So this is more something that would help you a lot in the exam, but it's nothing we will test in any way or that is, in my opinion, crucial to understand or learn. Then we will get to DTDs and valid documents, meaning how to define grammars for XML, how to set rules what is a valid document, how a document should be structured. And the main focus of this course is the usage of XML in organizations. So how can it be applied, which purposes, etc. We structured the course. The seventh that is listed there is co-located with the last exercise. So there we will, when discussing the last exercise, also give a course wrap-up. If you have any questions about the full course or for the exam, that's the date where you where we can address them. Otherwise, we will first now give an introduction to the course and XML today. Then on Thursday, Henry will go through the basics of XML and XML documents. And in the third and fourth lecture, we will look at logical structure of XML before going to a bit more complex issues like XSL, so the representation of XML documents, so that we as humans don't have to look through XML code, but can see it nicely, for example, as a web page. So previously in this course, we always had we always based this course on the old course material by the previous XML courses that we showed in the start, presented by Airi Salminen. Now we still have that. We still use that as a background or recommended reading. But of course, your main source for information should be the slides, which are available at Optima. All of you who are registered to the course should have access to it by now. If not, please send us an email so we can check and add you manually. And then we suggest the course book Beginning XML. That book, I can actually maybe go to that page now. So that book is available as an e-book in our library. Here's the link, and through the eBrary e-book collection, you can get to the book and either read it online or download it. But if you download it, it's just valid for 14 days. So I will just read it online now. You can see that the book is very, very extensive. It covers a lot of topics that are for this course not really relevant. They are very interesting, but not really relevant for this course. So we will, of course, point out which sections of the books are most interesting. So in general, the part one, besides the XML namespaces, is very relevant. Namespaces is, of course, important, but we won't discuss them in detail. Then the document type definitions, so DTDs, is an important topic. But at the end of each lecture, the last slide will always tell you in which chapters or sections of this book you can find more information, and also in which sections of the previous course script you can find more information if you wish. So this book is very, in my opinion, very nice with practical examples. It's written by people who really know XML, work for the organizations that define XML standards and specifications. So it's definitely worth looking at it. And I don't know if I have to go to Optima now, but in Optima you can find the course slides, of course, and also, again, the link to this course book, the course script, and what we added still there are some support materials, meaning those are some multiple choice questions that are just for you to check your own knowledge. So we won't check them in any way or anything. It's just for if you prepare for the lecture, for the exam, for example, that's a way to see did you understand the different concepts, etc. Then, of course, as additional readings, you have the official XML specification. As I said, that is mainly written in this EBNF form. So if you understand it, the specification will help you not a lot. If you don't understand it, it probably won't tell you anything because it's in this weird language. And then some other information that is relevant. So, as I said, we have four exercises, or four mandatory exercises in this course. Every week, starting next week, there will be an exercise, and you can complete this exercise individual or as group assignments of up to five people. And we handle it in the way that we have four mandatory exercises, meaning they are graded with pass or fail, and they have to be passed to be allowed to enter the exam. But additionally, in each week, there will be two exercises where you can get bonus points. So they are not mandatory. You don't have to do them. But if you do them, you can get bonus points for the exam, and you can get up to 15 points, which means if you pass all the mandatory exams and get the 15 points, then you will just need 35 points. No, you have to pass the exam, but you can improve your grade in the exam. So if you get 50 points in the exam, which would usually be the grade 1, if you have the 15 extra points from the exercises, you will get a 2 instead, and so on. So usually, by doing those exercises well, the additional exercises, you will be able to improve your grade by 1. But the important thing is you have to, first of all, pass all the mandatory exercises and you have to pass the exam. Just then the bonus points will be added to your score. You can see the dates of the demo sessions, meaning where the exercise will be explained. So our colleague Tony will give some... we'll present ways how this exercise could have been solved. Those are sessions for you, so you can get some more feedback on what was done. You can, if you had problems, you can also ask him about those, etc., and he will present just a suitable solution. So those are, of course, very helpful to get the hands-on experience with XML. The deadline for providing the exercises is always one day before the demo session. And if you don't meet the deadline, you can get additional exercises, or it's counted as a fail. And as I said, if you fail one mandatory exercise, you are not allowed to enter the exam. So in the exercises four, we will touch these topics, so basics of XML, more XML, so in both of those you have to write XML documents. Then looking at the document type definitions, where it's about providing the rules for the document so that the computer knows if the document is okay in its form. And then the style sheets and the simple object access protocol. And of course, those demo sessions are also in English. Tony also speaks Finnish, so if you feel more comfortable, if you have a question addressing him in Finnish, then that's also no problem. But in general, they will be in English. And I think he usually offers that after the demo session, you can also come to him to speak one-on-one about the exercise. So in every demo session, the previous exercise will be discussed. Common mistakes will be discussed, so what did people wrong, but also best practices will be presented. So what would be good ways to solve the presented problem, to solve the task? Tony promised he will still put all assignments online this week, so you can get also already an overview. If you are very familiar with XML, then probably you will see that none of those are any problem for you. And then as I said, you have the possibility for one-on-one support. And those sessions won't necessarily be a full lecture, so 1.5 hours, because they are sessions for you. If Tony notices everyone did it correctly, there are no questions about it, and he's done with his presentation, it's no need to continue. And some hints that we gathered over the last years where we held this course. Do the exercises well. So even if you're in a group of 5, try to participate in writing the exercise and not just write your name on it, because in the exam you will have to write some basic XML document or work with XML, write some DTD or something similar. And from our experience, because previously the course didn't have this practical part with it, we could see that at that time everyone had really big problems to actually write XML or DTD because they didn't have the practical experience. And we could see over the last years when we introduced this practical part that the results in the exam got a lot better. And of course, we assume that based on the experience you collect in those exercises, the exam gets a lot easier. So try to be involved in doing those exercises, or at least try them out. It's a learning process for you, and it will help you tremendously in passing the exam. If you are able to do all the exercise tasks, you shouldn't have a problem with the exam in the end. Then some additional information can be found from our website and from Corpi, of course. And then we get to some practicalities. So what we do as a change this year compared to the last years throughout the course, Henry and me will go to an XML editor and play around with XML. So if we explain something theoretically, like this is DTD, these are different types, and this is how you do it, we will afterwards go through an editor and try it out in the document. What does that actually mean in practice? How do we write it? How does it look then in XML? So those examples we use will be available in Optima as well for each course. And we would encourage you to bring your own device, bring your own laptop, because then when we go into the more practical parts, you can actually play around with XML already and see how it behaves if you try different things, etc. So I think that would be very helpful for everyone of you. As we are using Mac, and Mac is very restrictive in terms of XML editors because there are very few good freely available, we use ourselves Eclipse, which is a little bit of an overkill for just writing XML documents, but simple tools just as Notepad++ for Windows are also sufficient. They will be easier to set up and get started with. I myself tried this Vim, and I don't find it very, let's say, attractive and easy to use. That's why we decided for Eclipse. Here we provide the links where you can download it. If you use Eclipse, make sure to have one version that includes the XML editor, so not just a very basic version. We would suggest the IDE for Java EE developers. And if you install that, you will get to Eclipse, which looks like this. And then you can easily include new or start new projects. And if you want to start an XML project, you can go, for example, to examples, and there you have editing and validating XML files. And when you do that, you get these XML examples where you can already play around with it, you can see it, and where you can just use it. And to get an XML file, for example, if you download an XML file from Optima and you want to get it in, you can also just drag it into this menu. We found out that you can always just drag in a single file. So don't try to drag in multiple files. I have no idea why it is like that. But here you can see it. We have here already some examples for the course in, like a poem. And you can see then it is quite nice because it highlights the syntax of XML in different forms. So you can see it quite easily. Also, this Eclipse, for example, has an automatic validator in, meaning if you make some simple mistakes for forgetting a bracket somewhere or using capitals where you shouldn't use capitals, it will tell you immediately, and you can immediately also do a full validation of the document. So this is, of course, a quite nice and sophisticated tool, but any other tool is also possible, and I would just recommend to use one that has this highlighting functionality, because that will make your life a lot easier, because you can easily see which parts belong together, etc. And also, with the validating functionality, of course, it makes your life easier when doing the exercises, because if you do a mistake, the system will tell you. For the exercises, the demo sessions are not mandatory. So if you don't have any problems with the exercises, you don't have to go to the demo sessions. If you have problems with the exercises, or if you want to get more information on how to do it, you can go, but they are not mandatory. It's, as I said, a session for you to help you if you have problems, if you didn't understand anything, something. It's just how it is. I said that the Eclipse can validate XML documents, but for the exercises, Tony asked you to use the official World Wide Web Consortium validator and provide the printout that validator gives to you. And if we look at the validator, it's very, very simple. It's just a web page. So either you can give in a URL or URI for the file. You can upload a file, or you can just copy-paste your XML file in there. And if we, for example, copy this in, then we can check it. Okay, this document cannot be checked, probably because in this version we didn't put a DTD, so no grammar in there. But you click check, and then you will get an output on what how it should be, or where are the errors, etc. And that output should always be sent to Tony together with the XML file you created for the exercises, so that he can see that if the validator says it's okay, then usually it is okay. So if everyone does it individually, he doesn't have to go through 190 XML documents and check them all. But just for our information, how many of you know XML, know more or less what it is? That's very few. Have any of you worked with XML previously? Okay, so everyone is kind of new to the topic, or don't you just dare to say it? You can also write me on the M wall. Then maybe how many of you have heard of XML, that something like that exists? Okay, so at least quite many have heard that something like XML exists. But then, let's start. What is XML? XML, first of all, stands for Extensible Markup Language. We will get to what that actually means, what extensible means, what markup means. But XML itself is very simple. It has a couple of rules how to define different things and how to write it, but itself is very simple. Unfortunately, the application of it is not, because with XML, we use XML commonly to enable different computers or systems, applications to interact with each other or to structure information. And of course, the information that we want to send from one computer to another or that we want to structure might be very complex in a real-world application. So there might be very complex structures in the document. So that's usually the problem when using XML, that you have to understand what kind of information there is, how it should be structured, etc. XML, in general, is a set of rules or guidelines. So it just provides you with rules how to create a document, how to basically create your own language, because XML is something that we call a meta language, meaning it is a language to describe another language. That is the nice thing about XML. We can create our own language. We can use it in the way we want it to be used. We can apply it to any different context or different problem area. And the primary purpose was to help computers to share data. For example, if you think about an easy web page, you have a web page, but it should be able, or you have information and you want to display it on any device. So you want that it is displayed on a computer screen in a browser, but also on any mobile device or whatever other device there might be with different screens, and it still should always look nice. And this is, for example, something that XML enables. Or we have you have your Outlook on your computer, and you have your Google Calendar, and you want them to synchronize data. That is something that XML enables, because it allows the applications to communicate with each other, to share data, to share information. This meta language, for me, when I studied, everything that had the meta tag in it was something that was very, why, what is the point of that? But meta language here really just means it is a language to describe a language. For example, when I went to school in Germany, Germany has a lot of poems and a lot of different plays, etc. And in my beloved German classes, we had to analyze them constantly. And we had to learn a specific language how to describe the poem. So we used the language to describe language, meaning that the language we used to describe the poem was a meta language. Also, for example, if someone of you would try to explain Finnish to me, you would basically use a meta language to describe the Finnish language. For example, in the sentence structure, you would use objects and subjects and all those kind of terms that we in the common grammar have there. And that's then also a meta language to describe the Finnish language. And that's exactly what XML is. So what XML does is it defines a custom tag set, meaning you define your own parts of the language. A tag can be understood like as an element of the language. And you can define them yourself. You can define what the semantics of that is, how different elements relate to each other, how they belong to each other. And those tag sets are then called different languages. I know in the start it sounds always a bit, there is very much, but you will, I guess, especially in the second lecture when Henry will show you some more hands-on examples on it, it will get quite clear. And the nice thing is with these tags, we can build them for many different purposes. We can build them for problem domains, for specific applications, for whatever. And we can also see that there are XML languages that are used among all hospitals. But there are also XML languages that is just used for one very specific application in one specific hospital. We are very flexible there. But one thing that we have to make sure is XML is not a programming language. So we don't program anything. The computer basically doesn't do anything. We have, of course, something that is called an XML processor, and it does something with the XML document. But we don't, by writing an XML document, we don't really execute any program on the computer. So we just structure information in a specific way so that the computer can understand it. And this is the official definition of what XML is. It was developed for representing information, and usually data is represented in exchange as so-called XML documents. So an XML document is just a file with the XML code in it. But we don't have to go through that characterization in detail because it will get quite clear when you see the examples. So there are many different examples where XML is used in practice. We have, for example, to store information or to structure information. We have documents, we have metadata, we have databases. Does everyone know what metadata means? Or who of you knows what metadata means? Okay, one. Metadata is basically information about data. So if we have, if we look at this poem example, we can see there is the text of the poem in, but here we have information like author, date. So that kind of information is not maybe necessary to display the poem somewhere or to send the data, but it's additional information that might be useful in a context. For example, if we would have all the documents stored in a database, then we could search for, we want all documents that are from this author. So it's additional information that make a lot of data retrieval tasks and so on a lot easier than if we wouldn't have that. And then we have XML as a format for data interchange between software applications. Yes, I will do that in the future. The text at the moment is not that critical for you to read. It will be more important in the upcoming lectures. But I gave some examples already how XML can be used. Maybe you can now, for a couple of minutes, discuss among you with the groups what kind of examples you could think about how XML could be used for documents or metadata or as a data interchange format. We don't have to think about databases so much because we won't really look at XML-based databases in this course. It's just here for the completion. But maybe you could just discuss, think about what kind of examples do you maybe use in your daily life where you could imagine that XML could play a role. Of course, I will then present some examples afterwards. But just discuss among yourself a bit. Okay. Did you find any examples? Does anyone want to tell me something you came up with or write it to the M wall? Don't worry if it's not XML based or whatever, it's not a problem. Just where you could see that something like that could be used.
Writing an
HTML file, yes. Very good. HTML is an XML language. So it's a language that is defined in XML. So that's one example where XML was used to write provide a language that is very, very widely spread, basically for almost every web page to some extent. So that's one good example. So HTML is a XML language, and to, of course, represent data on the internet on web pages. Did anyone discuss any other possible topics? Yes? Yes, also. So there are games that use XML, for example, to modify specific parts of the game for people, so that people who are not programmers can modify the game. And XML allows us to create, for example, input forms. So if we want to have a form, we can create that in XML, and then we have a simple user interface where we can put in data that transfers to an XML document so that the system can understand it. And in many cases, something like that could be used for games or also just for normal web forms. It's basically the same technology. If you are going to a web page like Amazon or whatever and they ask you to create your account, quite often those forms where you put in all your information are more or less XML documents. You don't notice that they are, but internally they are created as XML documents, so they can easily retrieve all the information and give additional information, because if they would just store it as a text file, then they have standing there Philip Holtkamp and they don't know what it is. So if they put it in a tag that is called name, then they can work with that in a better way, because they know, okay, here is the name of the person.
It is used in email addresses also, headers of email addresses?
Headers of quite often email, well, email addresses not, but headers of email addresses are provided in XML, because some information like where the email is coming from, where it is sent to, has to be exchanged between the applications, and then, of course, XML is one possibility to handle that, yes. Did anyone think about some other kind of data interchange between software applications? Because we basically do it all the time. We just don't really notice that XML is involved there. For example, for you, very important task to, if I add your grades to Corpi, it has to be sent to some other system. So there is an XML document created with the ID of every student and the grade, and it's sent to this other system so that the system understands here are some grades and I have to add them. So information is exchanged. But we can go through some examples now. First of all, we look at XML as a document format. We have, as an example, web publishing, like HTML, XHTML, etc., all the different forms we have. It's quite often used for learning materials as well. If we look at a software like Moodle, for example, which you might have come across or might or probably will come across during your studies. We see the complete course in the system and with all the different documents for the lectures, etc. And those kind of information is also stored as XML documents for the purpose that if we want to move the course from one system to another, we can do it because it's in a standardized format and both systems understand it, so it's easy to transfer it. Then in technical documentations, factories, etc., they have a lot of information and a lot of text, but they need to structure it in a way so that it's easy to find the right text that they need, because you probably all know that the free text search can take forever if you have a huge amount of data, and if the data is structured, you just have to search in specific parts of the document. The same for dictionaries and newsletter archives in the publishing industry. So we have a lot of different applications where XML can be used, and this is just a small sample set. There are millions of others. And what we do is we use, as I said, structured documents. Structured documents means, as you could or maybe in the last rows could not see in the example, that we have those tags that tell the computer what is this, how, and then we can have some kind of give the computer rules how we should handle it. So we have defined the text that comes now is the name of the author. The text that comes next is the title of the document. The text that comes next is the first paragraph. So if we have a structure within our document that is understandable by the computer and by other applications, meaning if we search for it, we can just say search for the author or things like that, while otherwise we would have to go through the full document. Then we have something that is called DTD, or in general schema, which is where we provide a rule set for our document. For example, we can say we have the document, we have the structured document, and every single structured document has to have an author and a title, so that we don't have any documents that we can't find afterwards when we look for different authors or when we search just for the title. So we can define that this has to be there, otherwise the computer will give you an error message. As you know from forms quite often, on the internet, you have required fields. That's nothing else than exactly that. The system tells you this information has to be here. Otherwise, I can't handle or I can't follow this. And this is something we can define in those schemas, basically those grammars in a way for the language, because that's, and it's very, very useful for us. Then, because we have this kind of structure, it's much easier to present those documents or parts of the documents with different style sheets. So if we want to present the title on a web page differently than the first paragraph or the author's name, then it's very useful if the computer knows, okay, this is the title, because then we can say, okay, if it is title, please use the following formatting. If it is author, use another formatting. So this kind of structured documents give us, in many cases, a lot of possible functionalities. But, of course, it requires a lot of effort to create those documents, especially if you have a situation where the normal text documents are already there, and then someone should rewrite them as XML documents. And, of course, you have to write this kind of rule set, this schema, how the document should be written, like there has to be always the author. And for that, you need a really deep understanding of the application and of the application domain. So you need to know people will search for the author, or the author is an important part and it has to be separated from the text. If you don't know that, you will not put it in your rule set, and then it's not there. So some of the examples, XHTML, as mentioned, this is what we see on our browser, on our laptop, and what is behind that. Oh, here we can see we have already the different styles. We can see the welcome is in green. There are different fonts, etc. So, and the computer knows that because we define how these parts should look, and because the computer can understand that, okay, this is the title. How it looks then in the as a XML document is something like this. This is not, of course, the same as before. This is just very, very minimal. But we can see we define something as a here as a title, etc. And then we can have some kind of style sheet that tells us, okay, how should a title look on this web page? And the advantage is that we can, if we define this kind of set of rules, we can, of course, reuse it. We can make sure that if we have a web page with many different pages, all titles look exactly the same because they all use this title tag, and we define somewhere how titles should look. Another example for XML structured documents is Word documents, doc files. If we think back, Microsoft Word 2000, old versions, where we really had this ending .doc, we usually had a problem because there was not really any interoperability between Microsoft Word and any other system. And the reason for that is that these doc files were binary files. So they were just binary files, so it was very, very hard to understand what is happening there. And it was basically impossible to get the full support in any other application. And quite often when we try to open a doc file in another kind of application, the formatting was broken or other things because it just couldn't process this kind of binary file. And then through the introduction of docx, which is an XML-based format, so the X in docx stands for XML, we can see it's suddenly saved in an XML format as a structured document. So it's very easy to understand. This is the heading, this is the title. It's an open standard, so the different systems can interoperate with each other. They can understand, or OpenOffice suddenly understands what Word does and so on. So it's it was a huge step. And that is one of the other big advantages of XML. We can standardize things that are understandable by different applications, and because of that, we can guarantee the interoperability between the systems, which otherwise is not necessarily given if we use proprietary binary kind of formats. And those are two of the main applications in terms of a document format from XML: to represent information, to have the structure, and to guarantee the interoperability. Different systems can understand the same document. The third main function is the data information retrieval. I don't have anything here, but as you know, Google, for example, one part of their search, of course, is also to look through XML documents, etc. We then have XML as a metadata format. As I said before, metadata is information about information. We give additional information. So we can give information about different aspects. We can give information about means of the creation of the data, purpose of the data, time, author, etc. So if we think about, for example, our course, our slide set, we could have information given, okay, this slide set was used to provide a course on a basic course on university level, etc., in Finland, so that maybe someone coming from another country might check, maybe there are some examples in that don't fit to my country or my culture, etc. And in many cases, the metadata is as important as the primary content, because it allows us to find the content. It allows us to understand the content better. And one example is LOM, which stands for Learning Object Metadata. We use that in Scout, in Open Scout, the project Henry shortly mentioned. And what this learning object metadata is, it is a XML document that describes the content of a learning object. So, of, for example, a slide set or of a video. And it's a standard. It's standardized. And through this kind of metadata, we can give additional information. Like, as I said, where was it used? Who wrote this? On which educational level, for example, which learning outcomes were addressed with this document, etc. And this is a IEEE standard, meaning there is a standardized form of this XML language. And that also means a lot of different systems, applications understand the standard. And that allows us then to take, for example, one course from Moodle and put it to another system, and you can just run it there because both understand it. And Henry will get to that on Thursday. XML stands for extensible markup language. The extensible means it can be extended. In our context of Open Scout, the standard LOM, the learning object metadata, wasn't enough because we wanted to have more information about the documents. So, because we can extend the language, we could just add additional fields, additional elements to the language, and it was no problem. The other systems would still understand the base set that is in the standard version and disregard the additional functions. So this kind of metadata also allows interoperability, data retrieval, etc., just on a different level. We can have additional information. For example, what we did in Open Scout. Open Scout built a federated infrastructure, meaning that we built a one search place, and you could search in many different data sources. Through all of these data sources used this learning object metadata. That meant we didn't have to, when someone searched, it was management content, so let's say someone searched for accounting. It didn't have to go through all the documents and search, is in this document something about accounting, go through the next document, go through the next data source, search there as well. But it just had to search through the metadata files that each of those presented, and they are just in a very specific field where it knew, okay, here the content is described, or some bullet points of the content are described. And that made, of course, the search a lot faster and a lot easier, and it allowed us to search in many different data sources at the same time. So you can see that there are really many applications or possible ways how XML can be used for metadata, for documents, etc. We are not limited in any way how we can use it, because we can extend whatever there is, and we can just define our own languages if we don't find something to be suitable. And basically, all applications nowadays use XML to some extent. Then we have XML as a data interchange format. When we asked you, nobody of you came up with any examples really for data interchange. But we use them all the time. with our mobile devices. We want all the time that the data we have on our computer and on our mobile device is basically the same. And of course, somehow the data has to be exchanged in some form. If we have cloud services, or if we have a cloud storage, we have our files there, but we can still can access the metadata to see what kind of file is there, what are the information about them. So what XML allows us is also to exchange information between heterogeneous systems, between different data sources and organizations in different kind of networks. And basically, the documents for data interchange are for applications and computers. So in many ways, they are. If you read them and you don't know that specific language that is used, you won't understand them because they are not meant to be readable for humans. They are not meant to be understandable for us because they don't have a semantics. They tell a computer what to do or give them information. But we have, with XML, we give a syntax to develop different languages for the data exchange. One simple example is, as I mentioned before, is the calendar synchronization. We have our Google Calendar in our app. We have different local calendars. And then we have iCal files. You might have heard iCal files when you download some kind of calendar event or something like that. And that's an XML file. So then our local calendar can directly implement it, get all the information through this kind of XML file. And quite often, this kind of process of synchronization happens without us noticing. But with our mobile devices, it basically constantly happens. There is all the time data exchange to different servers, to Facebook, to email accounts, to calendars, etc. Because we want to have the information on all devices, and through these kind of languages, it's possible. Then there are languages like SyncML, which is used for sharing contacts, calendars, tasks, etc. So Nokia, Samsung, a lot of different device providers use these languages because XML allows us to exchange the information between different devices from different providers. It allows us to have an interoperable system. If we use an iPad and some kind of Android tablet, we can still exchange the information between them because both understand XML. So there are a lot of ways how a lot of applications and uses for XML in our current world. And that's why it is important when studying computer science, information systems, and something similar to understand what XML can do and how we can use it. And that's why this is the main focus of our lecture. We don't want you to be able to immediately write huge XML documents and define grammars, etc., but to understand for which kind of purposes you can use XML, how it can be applied, and to be able, of course, to understand maybe some simple XML documents and write some simple XML documents. And I think that's the most important task, because if we understand that we can use XML for something, then Google is our friend and we can find out which kind of language based on XML we can use for this kind of purpose. So the benefits of using XML is basically information sharing. First of all, businesses can define their own data formats in XML, so they can send information between their applications. Then we can have tools to read and transform data from XML to other formats, like HTML with a web browser can be transformed to something that is nice for us to see. We can use it also in a single application just to store information and have faster retrieval of information. And we can deliver content because through XML we can also define different style sheets. So we have the same content document where all the content is in, and then we say, okay, we have one style sheet for a computer. If a computer accesses this with a browser, display it like this. If a mobile application addresses this file, display it in a different way. So it can be, it is visually appealing for a user in many on many different devices, and that is a very, very nice benefit. So, but I guess you will see them more when we get to the examples and actually hands-on writing some XML. And for that purpose, we are using a couple of examples in this course. First of all, we are using one example that comes with Eclipse because we thought it was quite a nice example. It's an invoice. So if you just think about a receipt or an invoice that you might get, you have a lot of information there on the paper, but that has to be represented somehow in a computer system, because if you put it to an accounting system, you have to have the receipt number and the data and the price, and the system has to understand, okay, the receipt number is not necessarily the price. It has to be able to differentiate between the information, and that's something we can do with XML. Another example we are going to use is this poem that I just had open already in the Eclipse, because it's a quite simple example. But if we, for example, say, I just want to display the fifth row of the poem, how do we do that? XML gives us possibilities to do that, and we will look into how we can do something like that, how a structured document can help us to find specific parts of the document. And as the last example, we will look at a TV schedule. Of course, not a this complex one, because I don't think that would really help to have many different channels with 20, 30 different programs, but just a basic one to see how we can structure a TV schedule and what kind of benefit it gives us. So, as I said, as the additional readings for each, I will present them for each lecture, or we will. In the beginning, it's basically the chapter one of this beginning XML and the old course script, part one. There are also some parts included that are not that relevant. For example, everything that has to do with namespaces. They are important in XML, and especially if you ever get to use XML in practice. But we believe that for a beginner's course of XML, they go a bit too far, and we don't really need them. The last thing I wanted to do for today is look at the... yes, you will. So if you have mistakes, well, first of all, if you have mistakes in your mandatory assignments, you always have to put your mandatory assignments to the XML validator of this World Wide Web Consortium. So this validator will tell you if there are mistakes in, and it will tell you where the mistake is. So I think usually you will correct these mistakes before you submit it, because otherwise that would be a bit... But of course, if there are mistakes still included, you know, there might be, because the validator doesn't check everything. We will get to that at some point. Some things go through the validator but are still not based on the XML rules. It doesn't mean you failed the assignment, no. you will have the, well, maybe not necessarily corrected, because the next day you will get the right answer or a possible right answer. But also those kind of mistakes are for the session important, because Tony can then say, okay, these are common mistakes that are made, and point them out and say, okay, to prevent these mistakes, you should do it in this way, or you should do, you know, how to fix the mistakes. So don't worry about those mistakes that much. Yes? Tony promised. No. Well, there is. I uploaded the guide for the exercises. I wanted to open it in Optima. So this document you can find in Optima, where you should have access to. If not, please send me a mail immediately so I can add you manually. And in this document, you can see first an introduction about the assignment, some hints what to do before you begin. Tony suggests to use Notepad++ or for Windows, or Vim for Mac. I suggest don't use Vim for Mac, use Eclipse instead, because Vim is, in my opinion, looks terrible, even if Eclipse is a bit more complex to set up. It's very nice and very powerful. And then you have the different assignments already. So you can see you have here, I think here have the deadlines when the assignment should be submitted. Also, for the assignments, you can use English or Finnish. If it's easier for you, you can do the assignments also in Finnish. Some information what happens in the calculation of points. So if you pass the exam and have zero extra points, of course, you have 50 points. But if you fail the exam, no matter how many extra points you have, the full course will be failed, meaning you have to pass the exam. And just some instructions how to submit the assignments. Then some guidelines here. Tony says use the World Wide Web Consortium validator. As I showed you before, you can upload your own file or just copy-paste the file in. Maybe better upload your own file, because the copy-pasting, as for me, might make some problems, especially if you use tabs to have the document look nicer, etc. All documents must contain zero errors, meaning the World Wide Web Consortium validator says they have zero errors. As I said before, it might be that there are some things that the World Wide Web validator doesn't see as an error, but based on the strict application of the specifications, is an error. For example, when we get to attributes, there is an ID type attribute which defines which ID, for example, a student has. And XML has a really, really weird rule, meaning an ID can start with a number. I have no idea why an ID can start with a number, but that is the official rule. I don't think the validator will complain if the ID starts with a number, but according to the official XML specification, that wouldn't be allowed. But with the zero errors means the validator doesn't complain about anything. So, as I said, it tells you where the mistake is. If you use something like Eclipse, Eclipse even tells you what the error is, not just where it is. So it should be quite easy to get to something that the validator says has no mistakes. And then you can see here in the document are already some basic assignments included. Don't worry if you yet don't understand how to do them. If you do, then this course is probably very, very easy for you. If you don't, hopefully you will in 1.5 weeks from now. But it starts with writing based on this kind of structure, a basic XML document with some specific restraints. And then, as you can see, you have always, for assignment here, you have this as the mandatory task, and then you have extra assignment for 2 points and a second extra assignment for another 2 points. So, as I explained in the beginning, this first assignment is mandatory and has to be done by everyone, and the other ones just give you extra points for the exam to improve your grade. Okay, do you have any questions about the lecture or the exercises or any practicalities? Otherwise, I would say thank you very much, and Henry will continue on Thursday.